I was gonna say one thing I do collect. I don't know if you've seen them. They're kind of expensive. The supersized hard copy giant size X-Men.
Oh yeah, the coffee table version.
Yeah, I do buy those every year. Just not only just for the stories and the artwork. It's so, you know, larger than life and beautiful color, and then all the extra materials to the back. So I've kind of matured, I guess. I matured into middle age comic book collecting.
Gone with his glass of wine and his pipe, going looking for my X-Men.
These days, the comic book owns pop culture. Literature, movies, television, even music. You'll find it all in the panel of your favorite comic book. Us, we're living the comic's life. We're breaking the panel.
Welcome to Breaking the Panel, where we're the weekly download for all things awesome and geeky and comics, comic books, comic TV, everything you love about comics, and sometimes a little bit on the side. I am the rock god of podcasting, Charles McFall, who I'm secretly awesome. To my left is Paul Klotz, who is secretly epic.
Indeed.
Wow, you'd let me down every freaking week, Paul. That's the thing. And guest starring longtime friend and podcaster, John Lee Hart of Secretly Timid.
Hey.
Really? Both of you? I was like, we are now going to talk about our sweaty balls. You know, the NPR. Really? That's Saturday Night Live thing. Come on, Saturday Night Live. They did it. We can do it. It's okay. You know that skit, right?
Yeah, but you're not Alec Baldwin.
You, sir, knew Alec Baldwin. All right, let's introduce John a little bit better. John, you are based out of Texas, and you do a what would you call your show? Is it a group, a cadre of podcasters?
It's kind of like a really irrelevant The View, back when The View was awesome, when Rosie O'Donnell was on it. We're like one... The very, like, the small, minuscule, like, the four progressive-minded people in Dallas get together and talk about the news.
Just all four of them.
All right? Four of us. Yeah, and then we get into fights, and we try to out-liberal ourselves, and it just becomes, you know.
And your very talented use of the F-bomb on that show cracks me up so much. You'll just come out left field with
it. Can't let me get the F-bomb in my brain. I'm trying to be good today.
So, a little history for those of you who listen to From the Helicarrier, or at least have listened in the past, much like Klotz was a co-host there for a year or more. I know it was over a year that you were there before you left the game. When I referenced John and Paul Tran, who helped me get into the game, who actually got me hooked on that game, this is that John. This is the John Lee Hart that got me addicted to that abusive relationship. So, I appreciate you, sir.
Thank you. Oh, you're welcome.
Lots of good stuff still going over there. And, you know, I haven't talked to Paul Tran in forever. I know he left Secretly Timid because he moved with his husband to originally like Michigan or somewhere, but now they're in the D.C. area.
Yeah, they're in D.C. Yeah. They're both doing really well. And Paul, I believe, still plays MMA too.
Yeah, every once in a while he'll hit me up with for some advice of like, oh, how the tables have turned. You guys taught me everything, and now you're asking me for the stuff, and it's fun. It's still fun. It's still a lot of cool stuff going on. But let's get to some headlines here. We don't have any emails today, but we love your emails. Hit us up at btp@giantsizeteamup.com. That's B as in breaking, T as in the, P as in panel. @giantsizeteamup.com. We'd love to have your emails. I thought this was a fun. I actually thought of Chris Wisdom, who is at a conference this week and could not be here. And Brian Ibbett is actually going to be off for the next 2 weeks. He is in Vegas this week, and then next week he is in L.A. for a wedding, I think, is what he's going there for. So next week you're going to have myself, Paul Klotz, and Chris Wisdom, and it's going to be just the bros chilling out in the clubhouse, man. No girls allowed type of deal. So but I thought of this story when I saw – or thought of him when I saw this. Free Comic Book Day wants publishers to stop offering anthology comics. Now, do you guys participate in Free Comic Book Day?
When I remember to.
Yeah, kind of the same. I have in the past. I haven't recently, though.
I can't say I ever have. I live in it's not really boondocks, Georgia, but the South is not strong, or at least the state of Georgia is not strong in the way of the comic book, the actual stores, right? So the ones I know of are spread out across all of Atlanta, and it's a bit of a pain to get there. So I typically don't want to go and fight any kind of crowds after driving, blah, blah, blah. You know, I'm going to give you some crybaby reason why I'm not going to go do it, but I haven't done it. But apparently, samplers and anthology specials have become a staple of Free Comic Book Day's bountiful offerings. That might change next year, according to materials acquired by Bleeding Cool. The organization behind the event is now suggesting that publishers shy away from offering anthologies beginning in 2017. The FCBD committee, which, you know, you shorten it just to make yourself sound better, right? You're still just an organization who says, hey, give away free comics. Recommends proposed comics have no more than one story with one backup instead of anthology stories. You're still free to submit the type of content you'd like. This is just what the committee recommends as they consider all applicants and their books. Now, there was a time, I do know there was a time with Free Comic Book Days that the free comic book you got was trash.
Yeah.
Right? Mm-hmm. It's some offbeat nothing that you would never like. And fortunately, that's become much better. I think this year, if I'm not mistaken, there was like a special Spider-Man book put out and some other, you know, good draw stories that you'd want to read. What do you guys feel about this whole anthology becoming the way of doing it and how they're going to try to move away from it?
I guess my question is, why the change?
I suspect that what they're trying to do is class up the event a bit for the exact reason you just listed, Charles.
Okay.
Like you said, traditionally, the Free Comic Book Day books have been kind of poop. You know what I mean? Like, they're usually... with the major publishers, a lot of times there are at least two books in one, you know, where there's one... It'll usually be that whole trick of one half of the book is the one way, and then you flip it over, and the cover's upside down, and it's another book on the backside. And they're basically... I mean, let's be real here. These are advertising materials. They're given out for free to get people to go into the local comic shop, because much like Record Store Day... This is an effort to get people to travel to their local comic shop, become aware of it, become a part of that community, hopefully support the local shop, hopefully be engrossed in what's going on there. And in that way, this event is awesome, and that's fantastic. But the problem is that, like, you go there, and most of the publishers are putting out these throwaways, you know, these nothing that you'd want to keep. Nothing that's really, you're really going to like it. The story is not necessarily going to resonate with you. So I think what they're asking for here is, like, we get that you see this as an advertising opportunity, but try to, like, put your best foot forward kind of thing, you know, without just coming out and saying it and just being like, you know, hey, the books you give us are kind of pooey. So, like, here. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that seems to be the some of this article is saying, is that it's not like an anthology like, oh, I get multiple stories and this is awesome. It's like an anthology of, hey, here's a little sample preview of what you could be getting, and here's five of those, and please go buy all these other books.
Right. You're just not going to get people that way, though. You know what I mean? Yeah. I mean, if, like, Marvel, for example, usually has a couple of books that they send out. You know what I mean? There's like four or five the last time I went. And I think you can continue to do something like that. If you're a major publisher or even one of the minor publishers, send out an entire experience. You know what I mean? Send out, if you're trying to advertise the Avengers, though you don't really have to anymore, send out a complete Avengers story. It doesn't have to necessarily be firmly rooted in the current continuity. It can be a throwback story. Here's another thing. It could even be a reprint story or something, or like maybe you list a few pages from an old book, but then take the opportunity to fill in a few new pages to tell a little bit more of that story, to flesh out something. And then it appeals to both, you know, the current fan and also prospective fans. And the current fan can show up and say, hey, I want to see those other pages. You know, I want to see, you know, what happened when Daredevil walked off camera and then he came back with that, you know, a little bit of a bloody face, but like the job got done kind of thing. I want to see that fight that was hinted at but not shown, that kind of stuff. You know what I mean? So I think there's an opportunity there to do something like that. The thing they really want to avoid, though, is, you know, obviously Free Comic Book Day, it's limited supply. It's what they can, you know, what they can ship out to all these stores and everything. It's a huge undertaking. I mean, can you imagine how much money is spent to ship these materials? But at the same time, that might get more people involved from all walks of life. Because, I mean, this is something that, in my experience with the tabletop gaming community, you want, like, your veterans, you want your firmly invested people kind of floating around when your newbies come in, when your prospective customers come in. Because you want them to come in and see people already engaging in the activities you're advertising.
Right.
For example, you know, comic shops and game stores, they usually get a chance to host Board Game Day. There's an organization that puts out, you know, National Board Game Day. And a lot of the various publishers, they put out promotional materials, you know. Sometimes they'll send free games to the stores that participate so that they can sell them and make a little bit of free money, but also, like, demo them and stuff like that. They send out promos, you know, like exclusive promos a lot of times, that sometimes fetch a fair buck on the secondary market, you know, stuff like that. And what it does is it gets, you know, the veterans in there mixing with the new people, and new people come in and they're like, oh, wow, look at all these people totally invested in this thing.
Right.
And I want to be invested in that thing, because that's how human beings are, right? When we're presented something that we might be interested in, and we see a bunch of other people are all interested too, I mean, how cool is it to walk into your local comic store and have a conversation about your favorite comics with someone, you know? And you can't always have that conversation with the guy at the counter or the gal at the counter, you know what I mean?
Right.
They don't generally have the time, you know. I've always noticed that. Like, I've been a salesman before, or just even a clerk, and, like, I've had to give them the puppy dog face of, like, can you let me go, because I got to do other stuff and there's 10 people behind you, you know what I mean? So but having other people in the store that they can interact with is great. I know that's what happens locally here. We have a small comic shop here in town, but you go in there and it's kind of packed to the gills, and everybody's just hanging out, and you see your friends and you see new people, and you see them pick up certain books, and you'll be like, oh yeah, that was, you know, they've got a really cool run going on right now. Like, right now, if it were to happen today, you know, you could talk about DC Rebirth or something and be like, oh yeah, it's so amazing, like, blah, blah. And so, yeah, I really think that's what they're looking for. They're looking to class it up a little bit and offer, you know, have those offerings be a little bit more substantial so that people actually want to turn up on both walks of life. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I want to read a story, not an advertisement for a story, if that makes sense.
Right.
Yeah.
I agree.
I'm absolutely with you. I've been reading, actually, here's marketing is what I'm thinking of, a good marketing thing. And John and I both still play Marvel Avengers Alliance. And right now we're collecting Ronin lot boxes. And, you know, of course, when you do the lot boxes, you get the cover. And This is the first time in all the lot boxes that the covers made me go, oh, that looks like a really cool story. And I ended up going to Marvel Unlimited. And sure enough, all of those books that you collect in the game are there.
Yeah.
And I started reading it. It's really good. So that's the kind of thing you want, is to hook that story. There were some, the ones I was thinking of in Civil War, there's obviously, there's a main storyline for those crossovers, and then there's the side stories. And there were some side stories, I think it was the Punisher's War Journals, that I ultimately didn't care about, because I really loved the Punisher, but it was just a collection of little stories inside of one book, and different artists did it. So you're like getting used to this one art style, and you flip the page, it's a whole new story and a whole new artist. It's like, ah,
I hate that.
Yeah. So I'm thinking maybe that's some of the things they're getting there. And I agree with you, Klaus. I think they're just trying to class it up a little bit.
I've referenced it before. I believe it was a Free Comic Book Day issue, but I went in one year, a few years back, I think it was 2012 or 2013. And there was an Avengers book in there that was, you know, this little one shot basically, where it was about all of, like, the best of Avengers villains, all, like, they're all in this lair together teaming up, and they're gonna, oh, we're gonna do this and that. And it's almost like tongue in cheek in the fact that it's so absurd that they would all be working together. and then Ultron shows up, like, they wake Ultron up basically, as they reassemble him or something, because they're trying to build, like, they're trying to use parts of that they found of Ultron, and they're trying to, you know, make their new doomsday type thing, but they wake Ultron back up basically. And so then it's all these villains like the Claw and a bunch of other classic Avengers villains having to fight Ultron. And I thought it was so cool. I was like, this is not a normal story. Like, you know, this is so cool. It's an awesome one shot. I do remember it being a bit brief, but it was really fun. And that was the kind of thing that was like, you know, I recognized some of the characters in there, and I noticed that some of them were ones that had appeared in the MCU and some of them weren't. And I was like, that's cool. That's the kind of thing you want to do. And I mean, I think Marvel is probably not the who's in the scope of this kind of statement. You know what I mean? I don't think they're the one that's coming under fire here. I think they're really trying to challenge some of the smaller publishing houses and the more independent type books to really step up their game and put out some quality stuff. But on the same side of that, like DC and Marvel, like put your good artists and such on it. You know what I mean? Like good artists, good writers, put out some quality stuff and really set the bar for what your, you know, the expectations you're going to establish in your customers.
Oh man, how cool would it be to bring back some of the great retired, like Walt Simonson? I mean, I don't know if he's retired or not, but you know what I'm saying is they come and the classic guys come and do a one-off, a one-shot.
Get one of your classic guys to do the cover kind of thing, you know what I mean?
Yeah, really, something like that.
But now, the before it gets too crazy, you know, those ideas, remember that we don't want to create a scarcity issue.
Wow, okay. Yeah, you know, yeah.
We absolutely do not want to incentivize, you know, smaller shops or individuals to like hoard these and try to push them on the secondary market. We don't want to see any of that. Because that just ruins this kind of stuff. I think that's one of the biggest mistakes that, to reference the gaming industry again, that they, you know, I've talked about it in the past on From the Helicarrier. I've talked about it a bit on Breaking the Panel. Some of the companies, for example, WizKids that makes HeroClix, they release con exclusives. And, you know, so you have to go to a major con like Gen Con or Origins or something like that to be able to get these and buy them from them directly. And they're pretty expensive. And they've actually gotten run out of events because their lines get so long and unruly, and like events don't want them to do that anymore. And the problem is that it actually creates a negative experience for the average customer, because they're like, I can't, you know, I live in Iowa. I can't get to, you know, New York Comic Con.
Right.
San Diego Comic Con. I can't get to, you know, necessarily get over to Indiana for Gen Con and stuff like that. And they're like, and I'm forced to turn to the internet and pay these people on the secondary market 2, 3, 4 times what it's worth. Just to be able to get this thing that I want, and they're always cool, you know what I mean? It's not just the one company. It's a lot of companies do stuff like that. They do con exclusives and stuff, and I'm like, well, I like what you're trying to do there a little bit, but it can also be really negative too, and it can really be a negative experience for your prospective customers. So
I think it goes with the trailers. We've talked about that multiple times of, yeah, have the experience there and then put the trailer online, which DC did this year immediately. As soon as they were showing the trailer live, it was online available. And that's
a number of the movie studios did the exact same thing. They premiered it at Comic-Con, and then within 24 hours they were all up, which was great, you know.
Right. Now, John,
yes.
Do you collect anything?
I collect virtual comics now. I don't actually go into the store anymore. The last physical copy of a comic book I got was Storm number 1, just because that's my favorite character, and that's the last time I went to a comic book shop. I still read comic books. I just do it all online, which is not the same thing at all, you know. In fact, I was going to ask you, that Marvel Unlimited, is it worth it, do you think?
Oh, yeah. I mean, you buy it for a year, it reduces the price so much. I think I pay somewhere between $60 and $70 a year, and you don't get everything, but you get a vast library of books, and you can still download a few. You can still buy them if you want to own a digital copy, which I'm not that collector. I want to read it, and sometimes maybe I want to go reread it every once in a while, but not usually. But yeah, it's just so much. I mean, I don't know how I'd find, other than going and trying to buy the collection on Amazon or eBay or something like that, how I'd find the Ronin story. I don't want to buy it. I just want to read the Ronin story because I saw it in my game and I thought it looked cool. And yeah, it's worth it.
If you're a voracious reader, if you're somebody who can really consume the content, you can't beat the value because there's so much.
They're almost paying you at that point if you really read all the time.
I was going to say, one thing I do collect, I don't know if you've seen them, they're kind of expensive, the supersized hard copy giant size X-Men.
Oh yeah, the coffee table version.
Yeah, I do buy those every year. Just not only just for the stories and the artwork, it's so, you know, larger than life and beautiful color, and then all the extra materials to the back. So I've kind of matured, I guess. I matured into middle age comic book collecting.
John with his glass of wine and his pipe going, look at my X-Men. I've got Xavier.
My giant-sized X-Men.
Well, you know, it's not exactly giant-sized. It will fit on your coffee
They're
table.
They're huge and heavy.
But...
yeah. But I don't know how you guys feel, but lately, like, I'm definitely a Marvel versus a DC. I have read some DC titles in the past, but like, it's just not the same of like the stories that I read when I was young, you know, back in the 80s when like continuity mattered and the special events were really special. Now it's just kind of, I don't know, it's lost some of the spirit, I think.
I think it's definitely changed.
I'm liking this. Shots fired, man. Warning shots across the bow. Let's go. I don't think that's an unfair assessment. I think...
I'm still reading it, so, you know, who's the idiot? Like, you know, any X-Men title, I'm still going to pick up and just think, like, what the hell's going on here? What, you know, where am I...
The good news is that responsibility will continue to lessen as time goes forward, as Marvel does everything they can to bury the X-Men in obscurity and pretend like they don't exist.
Well, unless they get them back from Fox, which rumors are
And then all of a sudden they'll just be spring right back to prominence.
So, all right, moving on. Here's where I'm trying to go. We are sponsored by Loot Crate, and it shows up every month in your mailbox. It's awesome. We just got September's theme. So if you could take, you're not going to take it, guess. I'm going to make you do that. Klaus, you hate when I do that to you. So I'm going to stop right there. Here's the theme. It's speed, which I actually didn't see coming. I thought it'd be Pokemon or something else. But this month, Loot Crate is a high-octane assortment of goodies from Batman, CW's The Flash and Arrow, Battlestar Galactica, Iron Man, and Gone in 60 Seconds. Which one of these doesn't belong?
One of these is not like the other.
Yeah, right? It's the whole Sesame Street thinking, wait a minute. I get that one, but... Gone in 60 seconds? Okay, cool. I'll take a Nick Cage behind a car wheel. That'd be awesome. So if you have style...
Nick Cage was never in Fast and the Furious.
Gone in 60 seconds, not Fast and Furious. See, Fast and the Furious might actually make sense. But no, it's Gone in 60 seconds. That's in the box.
Wait, really?
Yeah.
Okay, when you said Fast and the Furious, I was like, all right, it's still a relevant franchise. Like, you
heard Flash and Arrow.
That is crazy.
That's kind of random.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But you know what? It kind of makes you want to go, huh, what are they going to put in the box? What's in the box, man?
What random 10-year-old movie are going to put in next month's box?
Right? I mean,
now, it's capitalized, so I actually think this is the branding, but it features Sonic socks for when you got to go fast, a Transformers wearable for your world-saving needs, a winning Mario Kart tee, and more, and that's in the Loot Wear collection. They mix them together. So last month, we got to tell you what was in each different collection. This month, they're just kind of spreading it out, so saying that you'll have the Batman, CW, Flash, Arrow, Battlestar Galactica, Iron Man, Gone 60 Seconds in your regular box. And it sounds like in the Loot Wear, it'll add Sonic socks, Transformer wearable, and a Mario Kart tee and more. So you've got to the 19th of September at 9 p.m. to subscribe. That's 9 p.m. Pacific, midnight Eastern. And you'll get this crate. Otherwise, you're going to miss out. So head over to lootcrate.com/giant-size-team-up and enter code giant-size-team-up to save $3 off of any new subscription. I saw that's like Iron Man, okay. Battlestar Galactica, I get Flash, you get Arrow, all right. Batman, whatever. Gone in 60 seconds. What?
That is so, like, that is such an obscure pull out of nowhere thing to put in a a loot crate.
It does. It makes me go, what? What? I mean, look, I know it's the we over abuse the reference from Seven, but it's like, what's in the box? I gotta know now. I was like, what are you putting in that box?
So like. Ostensibly, that's something that they just found in a warehouse somewhere, right? Like they found some unsold item.
They went to Storage Wars and bought a storage unit, and it had a whole bunch of Gun of 60 Seconds collected.
Oh, look.
I love Loot Crate. I have a fun Loot Crate story. So,
oh, yeah, tell it.
For Christmas, my sister gifted me Loot Crate. Actually, she gave me her Loot Crate because she didn't... She didn't like it anymore. And so I had it for like 5 months, and I loved it. I looked forward to that stupid little box every single month. I got that Pikachu hat. I was, it was so much fun. And then it just disappeared. It stopped coming. And so I like sent her an email. I'm like, hey, what's going on with the Loot Crate? And she lied and got back to me and said, oh, they messed up on the shipping. They shipped it to my old address. So I was like, okay, but I'll fix it. Never came back. So she like either canceled it or she decided that she missed it. and decided not to tell me. And I think it was the latter because her wife is just as nerdy as I am. And I'm sure she was like, what happened to the Loot Crate?
Yeah, nice. Or she messed up and had to make things right, and all of a sudden Loot Crate started showing back up again.
Yeah.
So I get that. Oh, man. Well, Loot Crate comes to your home. You know what else comes to your home, Klotz? Apparently Spider-Man, because we have Spider-Man Homecoming news.
That was probably one of the worst transitions I've ever heard in my life. I mean, you heard it here, folks. That was, man.
I'm no Bo York, but, you know, I like to ham-fist it when I can. So we've been known to talk about, we never shy away from race or sex issues or sexual issues or anything like that. And there's a lot of bro tears about Mary Jane being cast by Zendaya from the Disney Channel being cast as Mary Jane. And we decided to talk about, there's going to be an article here. We're going to touch on the article a little bit, but really discussion is going to be about our view as a society on how things are done. And to give you a little information on Zendaya, she came up through the Disney ranks. My daughters grew up watching her on a couple of different Disney Channel shows. And now I think she's probably between 18 and 22. She's hit that young adult range where she's kind of graduating from the TV shows. I know my wife watches Dancing with the Stars, and she was there in some recent season.
She came in second, didn't she, too?
I don't know, Klaus, did she?
I wasn't watching it, but I was reading up on her the other day when all this controversy we're about to talk about broke out, and I noticed that she did quite well, so... You know, she's a dancer and a singer.
I never understood Dancing with the Stars. So they'll have like some geriatric star from the 1950s and then some 18-year-old professional dancer. Like, who do you think's gonna win?
Well, I think that's kind of the fun of that kind of, like, I don't watch the show on a regular basis, but I've seen a few episodes here and there. I think the fun of it is like you're kind of blown away sometimes when you see someone like an athlete or someone you just don't think of as like a dancer, and they can really knock your socks off, especially when they really invest. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But so the secret to winning apparently is to have a disability of some kind, missing a leg, an eyeball.
Did you see it when that woman's fake leg flew off? Do you remember that? Paul McCartney's ex-wife? Everybody was waiting for that moment, and it happened.
Wow. Tell me that was scripted, though. Come on.
It could have easily been. But we digress.
I could just imagine a producer being like, now hear me out.
I'm sure they kind of went out with something like that. Now, back to the story at hand. The Wrap has reported that Zendaya, whose character was previously named Michelle in the casting sheet, is now playing Spider-Man actor Tom Holland's love interest, Mary Jane Watson. Diehard Spidey fans have long speculated about whom the 19-year-old Disney Channel star, oh, there you go, there's her age, would portray in Sony's high-profile reboot of the superhero franchise. The article wrote before confirming at least one recent draft of the script has Zendaya's character dropping several clues to her identity as Mary Jane, one of the most familiar love interests, blah, blah, blah. We went, because we do our research here, we went to IMDb, and she's listed, actually, she's listed before Tom Holland or anybody else. She's listed as the top bill on IMDb as Mary Jane Watson. So now there has been some backlash because I don't know her full, like if she's filling out an application, right, for something and what her government classification of race would be. But she's obviously mixed race for sure. Fairly light skinned, but definitely ethnic. And lots of the bro hate has come out. We use that term loosely. You know, it's not just guys. I'm sure there's girls that have been mad too. But talking about, well, this isn't about race, but quit changing the race of characters to appease the critics. Quit. And it's like, well, if you look at her, honestly, she looks, there's some pictures of her with red hair and different stuff, like when she's dyed it. She looks like a much better Mary Jane than the two we've gotten previously, to be honest with you. As far as,
oh, I don't,
what? I think so.
Are you all familiar with the Twitter group Black Nerd Girls?
Yes.
Yeah, they wrote, one of the authors wrote a really good article of why Zendaya is actually closer to the Mary Jane character, given her like physical attributes as being a model, being a dancer, being one to stand up to, you know, and being, you know, owning herself more so than the previous actresses that have actually played her. And this might come as a shock to some people, but there are some black people with natural red hair and freckles, you know. So, because a lot of the bros are focused on Mary Jane's hair color as being a defining characteristic of the character, which is just ridiculous because, you know, Kristen Dunst is a natural blonde and she was cast and nobody, there was hardly, you know, a whisper of, oh, this is a miscast, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, the bros can pretend that what we're talking about here is hair color, but what we're really talking about here is skin color.
Yeah, that's what they are talking about. We're gonna address that issue for sure. But Klotz, you kind of took umbrage to me saying I think she looks like a much better Mary Jane than we've ever gotten before.
Yeah, I don't know how accurate that is. I don't know.
It's opinion. I mean, it's all it really is.
I don't think Kirsten Dunst was terrible, but obviously she didn't. You know, like, if you look at the way Mary Jane is portrayed in the books, she didn't meet the character attributes, if you will. She didn't have the figure. Right. She didn't have the stature. And that's not a slam on her at all. I think she put in a fine performance. Similarly, people have criticized I can't remember her name, but the girl who played Felicia Hardy recently, you know, like for the similar reasons. And it's like, well, let's remember, first of all, that comic book characters are drawn. They're comic book. OK, yeah. In case anybody forgot about that. And they have unrealistic attributes. OK, so it's going to be real hard to cast people to meet those.
And I think it's also worth noting that a lot of these characters were originally written in the 1950s and 1960s and 1970s, where, you know, you did not have a diverse cast of characters, which is now, I think, people modernizing certain characters. Mm-hmm. I don't think that's a bad thing at all. Especially if you're taking a character who was white and then changing the race, you know, it doesn't work the other way because, I mean, you can't separate a character like,
oh man, can you imagine Luke Cage?
You can't separate Storm from her race. You can't separate Black Panther from his race, but you can most certainly separate Mary Jane because her being white is not central to her character. You know,
right? And those three characters are very strong, and they were designed. You know, Black Panther, Storm, and Luke Cage were definitely designed to represent needs in the community. But is there a character? What about Rhodey? Could you change him to a white guy and be okay with it?
I'm sorry, you cut out who?
Rhodey, War Machine.
I don't think you can. I mean, I don't think what would you gain? This is my question. What would you gain by changing the race from that?
I don't know.
From a character like that. I don't think you would gain anything by changing an African-American to a white, but I think you could definitely change.
Interesting. I don't know how I feel about that. I mean, I don't know, because you know, we haven't thought about these things, but Klotz, you started to weigh in.
Well, you know, I mean, this is a complicated issue, okay? We can all acknowledge.
Yeah, it. I agree.
We can also acknowledge that we're three white men talking about it.
Yeah, well, yeah. And,
what you know, talking about, man?
Fair enough. I think there's absolutely validity to the fact that there needs to be more diverse representation. We've talked about this at length in the past, and that's the stance I've always taken. I'm always torn on this issue, but my opinion has developed over time a bit. And in some ways, I'd like to think that it's because my opinion has matured a bit. But the reality is Marvel has set the tone. You know, they're like, we're doing this. We're going to change characters. We're going to... And not just Marvel. I mean, because Fox did it with Fantastic Four as well. You know, there's characters are going to be adjusted to be more representative. And that's something I think right now, everybody who's listening and anybody who's not listening, I hope you get it through osmosis.
Nice.
The change is here. It's happening. These companies are going to continue to diversify their characters when they get the opportunity to cast them because they need to adjust to the current times. Mm. America is very different than it was in the 1950s now. We are even more diverse than we've ever been, and that population is more firmly, like, we're not just a country of, you know, white Anglo-Saxon people anymore where there's a handful of minorities. It's that we are a diverse, minority-driven community, you know, society. Our country, you know, I mean, when you say minority, that's a loaded, you know, yeah. That's a loaded word at this point. It's not representative really at all, because when you really look at it, there's such a tremendous amount of people from completely different, incredibly diverse ethnic and religious backgrounds. You can't just, you know, who is really in the minority anymore? I do think there's some validity to people being upset when beloved characters are being tweaked in this way. And I think I absolutely think there's a right way and a wrong way to go about it. My objections in the past to like the Human Torch casting was I felt like it was pandering to, you know, to try to pull in the urban audience unnecessarily.
Why did you feel like that was pandering?
Well, because they were casting like the hottest young black actor at the time. You know what I mean? Like he was coming off of a bunch of other projects that were wildly successful. Right.
Well, what you said earlier, because we have gotten some flack about, oh, you guys are just racist. Or, no, I am close to the African-American community. I do a lot of work in it and around it. And yes, I am a white man, but I never defined myself this way. Anybody who defines themselves by the skin, you start off on the wrong foot. But I felt the same way as Klotz with this. And this is what Klotz said before, was trying to get you there, was you felt like it was pandering to a community because it was just a movie studio going, hey, we're going to make this guy black, so we'll get black people to watch. And that's just offensive.
Oh, I didn't feel that way at all.
I kind of did.
Well, it didn't work. Nobody saw that.
And it shouldn't.
I felt like Fox was saying, okay, we're going to hire, you know, the hottest young black actor right now to play this role because that's going to bring in the urban demographic and we're going to mm-hmm. sell more tickets. And that I find offensive. I mean, if there's artistic integrity in choices that are made, if they're casting someone because they really are the best candidate for that role, or because, you know, that role can be morphed a little bit into, you know, that was the other thing, is like, because the thing with Fantastic Four is it was so awkward when you didn't change the pretty blonde girl to anything else. You know what I mean? You kept your pretty blonde girl so that you could still put a pretty blonde girl on advertisements and sell. Yeah. You know, in that evidence. That's the problem. Is that whole project, I think, reeked of, you know, desperate.
Well, the whole project reeked. Right? But, John, you know, I will say when I first saw the ad, I wasn't going, why is he black? I literally went, why is she not black? Why is she white and blonde? I don't understand.
Well, there are adopted brothers and sisters.
Yes, yes, but definitely.
And that is a ham-fisted way to arrive at that. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah. That everybody has that opinion. This is an opinion show, but we want to be very, very clear. This is a discussion show and an opinion show, and you can have your opinion and we can have ours. And it was my opinion that they ham-fisted, is like, okay, you got a black dad, a black Johnny Storm. Where's the black Sue Storm? I don't understand.
Do you think? And yeah, they did that. Do you think if they cast an African-American actress as Sue Storm, that would
It would not have helped the movie at all, but it would definitely have helped this discussion go forward.
Because I personally, you know, I'll admit I never saw the movie, but them hiring Michael, what is his name? Michael J. Jordan?
Michael B. Jordan.
Michael B. Jordan. I was close. That didn't really bother me at all, and I didn't really necessarily see it as pandering either. To me, I saw screenwriters saying, okay, we have Marvel's first family, and there's no diversity here, you know? Because, I think they, like we said before, you know, wanted to kind of bring it a more modern story and to show a broader representation of heroes. Some people, I mean, I don't fault anybody for thinking that it's pandering, but for me, I would think that there are more potential positives from diversifying the cast than potential negatives. And I guess you have to wonder, like, who was the target audience? Because when I saw the advertisement for that movie, I didn't necessarily think that they were trying to, and maybe this is their downfall, that they were targeting diehard Fantastic Four fans. You know, because I don't think that there are many Fantastic Four fans that exist.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think really what they were trying to turn it into an exciting sci-fi experience. You know what I mean?
And it was weird because I remember when those first trailers came out, people were really excited. And then something flipped. I think maybe when the critics saw like the first cut of the film and said, hey, it's trash, that... then we're like, yeah, it's trash. But I remember, I don't remember what movie it was that the trailer was in, but the audience I was in, people clapped for it. So,
mm-hmm. Well, yeah. To circle back a little bit to really firmly explain where I think Charles and I are both coming from here, we felt like they missed the opportunity to cast both of them as black, and make a statement and say we're diversifying, yes, but we're doing it and staying true to the origins of the characters. They're brother and sister, and we, because that's my issue, is I'm like, when you cast the guy and you race bend him, I guess, quote unquote, and then you don't recast, like I said, the pretty blonde girl, I think that's really I think that's very disingenuous. I think that's like, well, then you're not making casting changes for diversity's sake. You're making casting changes for dollar sign sake. And that is, to me, offensive.
Well, one thing that I do want to point out, especially when, Charles knows that, mm-hmm, I play poker. And so at the poker game, I don't know how we got on the topic of white privilege and just how everything in the media is really garnered towards a white audience. And I challenged one of my friends, or we turned on the television, and I was like, hey, look at every single commercial right now. Just about every single commercial, you're going to have, you know, white actors and white actresses pandering whatever product it is, to the point where if it's different, it stands out. If you look at almost every single television show, most of them, the central character is a straight white man. You know, just think about it. Arrow, Flash, Walking Dead, all of these have a central white male character. And it took, I honestly don't think that he still understood my point, but it's like when we're so privileged, it's almost like we're blind to it.
Yeah.
You know what I'm trying to say? That
you're used to seeing it a certain way.
Now, when all of a sudden they cast a black actress to play Valkyrie and people are, you know, throwing their fists up in the air and getting mad, or they cast a black actress to play Mary Jane Watson, they're like, oh my God, we love Mary Jane. You don't love Mary Jane. Nobody really loves Mary Jane. Yeah.
I think a lot of people in Mary Jane's case is they're firmly committed to the redheaded pinup mentality. You know what I mean?
Yeah. But at the same time, none of these film studios, that they will cast a black actress to play Valkyrie, but they will not cast a black actor to play Thor. And that's where I think Fox Studio did have a set of cojones for changing Johnny Storm, because that was a starring character, you know?
Right. Well, let's take it to a better received film. And I want to touch back on Spider-Man before we finish, but Suicide Squad, Deadshot is traditionally a white male. They cast Will Smith, and the only thing we discuss is Will Smith going to be too much Will Smith for Will Smith. You know, it was never about his skin color, right? And that I'd never heard any kind of nerd rage over, oh no, Deathlok is white, what are you doing? You know, it was never that, because it was a top class actor and a character that a lot of people weren't that familiar with.
Yeah,
in a movie that we didn't really know what was going to do.
Yeah, I wasn't familiar with him at all. All I knew that the character from Arrow. But I thought he always wore a mask anyway, so it like doesn't really matter.
Well, a lot of times, but you know, the thing is he's traditionally white, but it didn't matter. My point is, it didn't matter. There was no rage about that. So yeah, I agree with you. I think when you start picking on Zendaya and Spider-Man, then it is more or less about skin color and like you said, class to pin up. Now, here's the other thing about this article that's going to be linked in the show notes. It's labeled, did Disney pull strings to cast Zendaya as Mary Jane? And the one thing I want to talk about that is, well, one, probably, but two, has Marvel/Disney not proven they know how to cast the crap out of a movie?
Yeah,
why are we? I think if they did pull strings, it's going to make it even better, because people. So I do like this one clip somebody said, because she's from Disney and this show is a reference to a Disney show, even though she was not on it. It says, it's not long before we'll get to experience the sweet life of Hulk and Cody. You know, or insert Disney TV joke here type of deal. But
I'm confident that because Marvel has a track record at this point, that they have, you know, well vetted her before they announce any kind of casting. I'm sure that in the casting process, that she's proven that she has the chops to play the character and that she's done something to impress them. I'm sure, because Marvel proper, you know, Marvel Studios hasn't really. They've not shied away from casting people of diverse ethnicity in roles that were traditionally white or otherwise, which I appreciate. And they've gotten a lot of flack over the... I mean, come on. You know, we had Heimdall.
Oh,
there was
a
big hubbub about that. That was really the first one. I mean, and Idris Elba is one of the most fantastic actors in the business. You know what I mean? Well,
there's also the hubbub of casting Kate Blanchett in...
We talked about that, which
is somewhat warranted, because I know there is this double standard, but that double standard exists for a reason. You know, I was personally hoping that they would cast an Asian American as Iron Fist, agreed. But that didn't happen. But you know,
well, Iron Fist, didn't he? He's a white boy,
but it's like another white character that learns kung fu, which is.
Well, you're right. But
it's kind of integral to the character, though, at the same time. Well, it is and it isn't, because Iron Fist is technically a mantle.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's true, but this particular, the modern Iron Fist is integral to the modern.
Yeah, and see, honestly, I don't know that much about Danny. What is his name? Danny something?
Danny Rand.
Yeah, so I should have kept my mouth shut.
No.
But that's the thing. You have the average perception on it, right? You know, you're the general walking populace right now. That's your perception on the character, and we might be a little bit more informed about the character because of our experience with it. But then again, even as I said it, I acknowledge the fact. Well, that's integral to the current character of Iron Fist. You know what I mean? That doesn't mean that there aren't other options that could be explored. I mean, I think there's just as much potential in perhaps casting a African American or a Middle Eastern,
well, here's,
you know, something like that as the character, and then putting them in that traditionally Asian setting kind of thing.
Here's the thing about Doctor Strange, though. We heard a whole bunch of reviews, and you're right, John. I mean, even we said it was like, okay, you got a great Emmy Award winning woman. But where's the Asian, really, that you missed the opportunity here? The Asian American, Asian, it didn't matter. I mean, where's the Asian-based person that really should have represented the Asian one? Here's the key, the flip side to that, though. In the comics, Baron Mordo, and I'm glad they changed that. I'm so glad they changed it. But Baron Mordo has like this Fu Manchu white guy mustache thing going on. He's very stereotype. And they cast a very talented black actor to play him instead. And you didn't hear about the positives of that. We just heard about the, and we agree with the negatives of Kate Blanchett. But it's an interesting world, and that's why we talk about it. You know, that's why we talk about it all day long.
I very much feel like sometimes when you do something like this, you just can't win.
Sometimes
I think Ancient One happens to be a character that they couldn't win with. You know, the director explained that the one of the main reasons they changed her ethnic background was because they had to avoid, you know, some socio-political issues in Asian markets.
Well, yeah, the China market.
Because if you cast them as one, you know, Asian ethnicity, you offend all these other ones and you isolate their markets and you can't, you know, you can't show it in mainland China. You can't do this.
Let's just call it what it was. I mean, they want, it's a Tibetan type monk. And if you could cast a Tibetan character, it will not be shown in China, period.
Right. But if you also, and like we said before, if you cast a Chinese actor, right, you offend a lot of other people, you know, and it's, there's a lot of tension between the Chinese and the Japanese and the Korean, the Korean and the, you know, there's a ton of tension in East Asia. And so that has to be acknowledged.
And what we're saying, John, is white men make money. That's all we're saying. Yeah. No,
I want to move to Japan and I want to die there. It's so pretty.
I want to have a place in Tokyo for sure. It looks awesome. Yeah. We've got to take a quick break on this nice break note. And I do apologize. I was just being a jackass about the white men make money. I apologize.
So, I don't. Yeah.
I know, but the way I said it came off very. It could. Ibbot's not here to do his standard face palm. Oh, I can't believe you said that, which off balances what I said. So I have to kind of do it for him.
I think we all know that you're ridiculous.
That's just true.
Firmly accepted.
All right. Go listen to our ad here. It pays the bills. It helps put some food on the table. And go support us, patreon.com/breakingthepanel. That way we can just bring more awesome sauce to you every week. And we'll be back in just a moment. All right, we're back now with one last topic that's going to get us out the door. We have about 15 minutes to talk about it, give or take. And Klotz, you kind of brought it up. It's about copyright disputes and how things are handled currently on the web.
Okay, well, this was brought to my attention by a friend of mine. Apparently, there are some content creators on YouTube right now that are having some issues in regards to their coverage of the AMC show Fear the Walking Dead. And what's been happening is they've been getting hit by copyright claims through YouTube's system, you know, which for the uninitiated, basically the way it works is a lot of times it's automated.
Oh, yeah.
If you show any content from a show or a movie, if you include audio, if you include video, or in this case, in some of their cases, if you even include still pictures, you can could potentially get flagged. It's an automated thing. And what they do is they immediately sever your revenue. So you can't do any revenue earning off of it.
Well, they take it, right? I mean, the revenue that you quote unquote earned goes to the claim it.
Right. And then it diverts it. And then what the content creator has to do is if they feel that they are firmly in the realm of fair use, like they haven't been, they're not stealing the content and, you know, just dolling it up a little bit to try to, you know, make their own quote unquote content. If they're legitimately like a review show or something like that, and they're following fair use guidelines, then what they do is they put in a dispute. And the dispute has to be responded to by an actual person. It'll, you know, go to the account of the
the assistant of the assistant of the assistant who hates their job.
Right, exactly. And they'll have to make an assessment. So I guess what's been happening here, and I'm not going to name any channels directly because we can't, you know, we here at the show, we couldn't find a way to verify that any of this was actually going on, but it has been. I have seen it. I've watched a few of the videos. I've seen it mentioned on a few channels, and they've been trying to address it. So I don't want to throw anybody out there just in case any of this happens to not pan out. But the idea was being that their content was getting pulled. They were putting a dispute in, and their dispute was not being reversed. So basically, AMC is taking their revenue and flagging their content and then not giving it back when it's, you know, it's responded to. And the one channel in particular stressed that he is not using any audio clips. He's not using any video. He's not using any stills from episodes. The only bit of their content he is using is the actual released publicity photos. So, you know, the packets that the AMC as a company puts out to promote the show and that, you know, the various news sources and everything can use, you know, in their articles and such. He's using what is supplied for, quote, you know, for fair use and for publication. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Sorry, I lost my train of thought there.
We're in such a gray area now with the internet and content creation.
Oh, yeah.
So fast. And it's, I got shut down. So I've got a new camera that I've been playing with, and I took it with me to trivia because that was a great place just to try it out in public and see what would happen. And when I did it off my phone, it worked great. It couldn't pick up any of the background noise. So you really just got me doing the trivia questions. And I was just going to do a little 2-minute test. And people were like, no, stay on. We want to answer the questions. And it was starting to become a thing. You know, people were going to tune into my Facebook page, hear me read the questions, answer them, and just kind of hang out for an hour and a half. The next time I tried it, it was a different situation where speakers were right behind me and the music is just hammering the camera. And Facebook shut it down. And said, and they were polite about it, but they shut it down. I mean, they shut it off. I could not log in as far as doing a live stream from the camera. I had to go to Facebook itself. And it said, yeah, your content, you're using somebody else's content. And if you disagree, you can just hit disagree right now, and it'll be sent to the content owner. It didn't tell me what the content was. I knew it had to be music, but it didn't isolate which song or whatever. And it said it will send it to them to review it, and then they get to decide whether I get to leave it up on my stream or not. And at that point, I'm like, but it doesn't matter. What I'm doing is live stream, and you just interrupted the game. And there's no point in disputing it because I feel like I could hit dispute and quite possibly a human being go, oh, it's just there. He's just reading trivia questions. But the biggest problem is it's computer-based. There's at least the first flag, right, is computer-based. It's all algorithms. And the one you're referencing, Klotz, I watched him talk about it. It's like, okay, I really would like some corroboration. I would like to know, are TV channels just shutting people down because they didn't send them directly that press kit? Right. They didn't send them the press kit. So therefore, I don't know. I mean, what are they doing?
One of the interesting things in this particular story is this person generates content for The Walking Dead proper, you know, the main show, okay, if you will. And apparently none of that ever gets flagged, which I find interesting. So it just seems to be that perhaps the content from this one show flags up more readily, and whoever's in charge of it is not reversing.
And who's to say they don't have a standard policy, just everything gets no.
Right. But this is a very interesting topic. It has popped up in the content creator community a number of times, particularly when this most recent system was rolled out, because it is very unforgiving.
Oh yeah.
For the uninitiated, the YouTube copyright infringement system is brutal. When your videos get flagged, you can basically keep producing videos that get flagged. It's not a huge deal per se because they just take the ad revenue from it. But the thing is, if you dispute it and the dispute is not accepted, you get a strike, and you can only have 3 strikes, and then you're done, and then your channel gets
banned. I've got a question. Is that why you see on some people's content when they're doing reviews or even just showing like an old wrestling match, they'll have the video in like mirror imaged?
Yes.
Crafty.
Yep, they're trying to dodge the scanning. A lot of times, if they're using audio, they'll change the play rate just a little bit. They'll tweak it.
Now, here's the thing, and this is something we've talked about on Ermagerd, my wife and I, about, because we do a show about mashups, and that's not a gray area. I mean, it's pirate radio at its heart, but it's content creators taking the best of your content and making it better and showing you a new way. And there's certain artists, and this is the only one I know off the top of my head, but Taylor Swift loves that. Her freaking album label doesn't. And so you put up Taylor Swift mashup, it's going to get flagged by computers and shut down. Although the artist herself loves when it's done, and if she can catch it before the computers do, she will share it out on her own channel, and then it doesn't get shut down. And that's a major problem we're in today is, okay, let's say, NBC's got a new show coming out called Timeless. And let's say they really want content creators. They really want people like the three of us and to get out there and use our voices to really promote the show. Well, they have to get YouTube to unflag everything. Now it's free game. right? Because, or you have to pay somebody to write new code just for you. And it's this ball of wax. Well,
this all kind of harkens back to the core issue is the nature of copyright in our modern environment. Because the way the law works, especially here in the United States, but it's similar in many other countries, is these companies need to demonstrate
harm, right?
Their ability to defend their intellectual properties, right? So that's why like content policy like this exists, right? And so that's why a lot of times the strategy is flag everything and then we'll sort them out later, you know?
Well, then any sort of, I'm sorry, I'm actually starting to be a paralegal right now, so I know a little bit about IP protection, but a lot of, like, if most people don't have, let's say if it was a false, somebody said, hey, you're using my intellectual property, a lot of people right now don't have the money to defend it, so it doesn't go anywhere.
Right. And that's actually what the gentleman I'm talking about said. He said, you know, his course of action in his comments, he mentioned this. He said, basically, once I dispute it, if they refuse the dispute, then I get a strike against me, and then I have to take them to court, basically. And most content creators can't afford to take anybody to court, especially not against a big corporation, you know, especially not against a big content producer like a major television network, or I mean, heaven forbid you come up against somebody like Marvel, who's owned by Disney.
Marvel, do you remember there was this guy, an animator that did this Danger Room Protocol? Did you ever see it, where he animated his old new stories based on the 1990s X-Men animated series, and they were gorgeously done. And he put one of them out on YouTube, and Marvel flagged it.
That's all it took.
Yeah.
Yep.
And that's all it took. He released the rest of them on Instagram in like 20-second clips. But, you know, and I was thinking I'm not a business person, but I would think any sort of free advertisement like that, especially when it's fan created, could only be a positive. But then I could see from there. However, I can see from the other side, you know, if he gets a lot of advertisement revenue, the Marvel creators, they're not going to get any of that.
They've got to work out. And this is what we said with the mashups. And this is where I'd like to leave it for me. And I want you guys to give your final thoughts because we got to get out of here. But we've got to move into the new age of content creation. So let's use that example of the X-Men. What needs to be done from a corporate level, because Disney is one of the beasts out there. I mean, if you get their attention by using their music at all on YouTube, it will get pulled in a heartbeat. And unfortunately, I knew a guy who was trying to do some contest to win some lifetime tickets to Disney as a Disney contest. And he was reporting people who used music in their videos to get people to vote for them and getting them shut down. He's gaming the system.
Genius.
Yeah. I was like, but you're an evil genius. But the lawyers at Disney would shut it down, blah, blah. What we need to do is move towards that new paradigm where Marvel goes, okay, let's actually look at what you're doing. You did something amazing here. How about we do a profit sharing? And if you say no, then we're just going to shut you down because we own the IP. But you're doing something we don't have to pay for. It is free of cost to us. You kick up, whatever. And they might want 60%. I don't know. If I'm Marvel, I am Giant Size Team Up. And if I'm saying, hey, you took some of our stuff and you're using it, but you're doing a great thing there, how about you give me 10% and we'll actually promote you with this? And we'll all make some money together.
Well, the only reason I would think a corporation like Disney wouldn't be down for that is that they don't have control over what the content does, you know. So if somebody's doing like Fear the Walking Dead and it's all this crap on every single episode, you know, and then they're making money off of it too, I could see how AMC could be like, yeah, no.
Yeah, it is. It's a hazy shade of gray.
We're gonna let Entertainment Weekly do the reviews, thank you, you know.
Charles, what you're kind of explaining there, though, that is the nature of a sponsorship or a sponsored review or anything like that. Those do exist. And the thing is, they're always going to be set up with a contract where ultimately the company in question gets final say. They get to see the finished product and say, okay, we approve or we don't approve, kind of thing.
Right.
Or, you know, I mean, that already exists. There are already sponsored videos on YouTube and whatnot. But the thing is, what we're talking about is people who are doing stuff like fan shows, like review shows. And do those content creators still deserve, and, you know, coming from where we come from, I absolutely think they do. Do they still deserve to get the revenue from their hard work and the content they produce, which is based on discussing or reviewing another company's content, but doesn't necessarily try to take that content and reproduce it?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So, like, if we do a review show of the latest Marvel movie, like, which we often do, you know, we're lucky because I was actually, how this was brought to my attention was a fan said, oh, is this something you guys have to deal with? And I'm like, well, no, we're a podcast.
Well, you know, here's the other thing too.
We're not on YouTube right now, so we're lucky in that way, but.
Right. Well, we do have to wrap this up, but here's the legal bottom line. We'll never get shut down because we're not taking any of their images or their sounds or their IP. We're simply talking about our experiences with it. And that's the line that Ibbot and I have drawn for a long time. With how do we handle this? Because I would love to be able to play audio clips and theme music and stuff, but you don't until you get that sponsorship. Klotz, finish your thoughts up. What you got?
Oh, that's it. I think it's pretty clear that we need to approach this. I think it's time for legislators and lawmakers to step in and start really ironing out policy.
Yeah,
that clearly delineates what it means to be a content producer in the digital age and what your rights are and what fair use is. And I mean, those things already exist, but it's time that, like, somebody has to step up and clearly define things so that everybody involved.
And unfortunately, it typically means a court case.
Well, yeah, that's the truth. Yeah. I mean,
all right, John, what else you got?
Oh, no, I agree 100%. It's time for stuff like this to be modernized. With any sort of new media, it has to, you know, it sometimes takes a while, but the law will eventually catch up.
I got some more thoughts, but we got to go. So, John, where can we find you on the internet?
You can go to www.secretlytimid.com. We do a weekly podcast most weeks. Sometimes we don't, but we usually do.
I don't always podcast weekly, but when I do, it's there every week. All right. Well, you can find this show, of course, at giantsizeteamup.com/breakingthepanel. We're on facebook.com/breakingthepanel. Twitter's @panelbreakers. Patreon.com/breakingthepanel. And a little plug for myself, if you go check out my new show, Rock God of Podcasting, at rockgodofpodcasting.com. I'd really appreciate it. That'd be awesome. Klotz is here every week. I'm here most weeks. Chris is here most. You know what? Actually, I think Klotz has missed the least amount of shows out of all of us that are on this show now. So you get a trophy.
And yet you still threw me directly under the bus a few weeks ago.
I think we've established that. So, and until next time, definitely check out Secretly Timid and give John a listen and go and have some fun and write us. Let us know what your thoughts are on all of these topics are. Copyright disputes, Spider-Man Homecoming, and Free Comic Book Day. We'd love to hear from you. btp@giantsizeteamup.com.
Breaking the Panel is the flagship podcast on the Giant Size Team Up Network. You can support the show at patreon.com/breakingthepanel, and you'll find more of our amazing podcasts at giantsizeteamup.com.